Blog Talk Radio.
Get enough of the Republican debates because it's basically comedy. And every debate so far, even the Democratic one, which I was surprised by because there's not as much stuff to make fun of there, but I gained like a lot of followers on Twitter because I was just ruthlessly mocking everything in sight. I'll continue to do that. I'll be live tweeting the debate tonight, and I will be ruthlessly and viciously mocking everything in sight because that's how I roll. So that should be fun. If you don't have a Twitter, you should probably get one. It'll be entertaining. But I have a great show for you guys today. So right off the bat here, we're going to talk about how your privacy is under attack even more. I didn't know it was really possible to get worse than it is, but somehow it is worse than it was. We have another bill that passed the Senate, and this bill is horrendous for the Fourth Amendment. Edward Snowden has been doing a tweet storm for the past few days with all the updates on this. But we have a Reuters report to discuss with you, and I'll put everything into perspective. Also, Senator Lindsey Graham continues to embarrass himself as he runs for president. There was this get-together yesterday before the debate, like a pre-debate party that CNN did with the candidates, which also, by the way, is probably unethical. You shouldn't be mingling with the candidates like that because you're not going to be objective in your coverage. But Lindsey Graham was making an ass of himself. He's so desperate that he's trying to, you know, change his persona and his image. He's trying to be like the cool party guy now and get votes that way by acting like Van Wilder. So I'll tell you how much of an epic fail that was. There are some hilarious little quotes in the article on that that show you just how really sad his campaign is. All right, and then later on we got unrest in Turkey, and Tayyip Erdogan, the president, yet again, is basically acting in an authoritarian way. We got censorship of free speech coming in a way that many of you probably don't expect, but perhaps we should expect it from here on out. It's coming out of France, so we'll discuss that. And Ben Carson and what his religious beliefs really are. Later on in the show, you don't want to miss any of this stuff. It'll be a fun hour and a half of politics before we get to the debate tonight, which is many, many more hours of politics. I like how, I don't know if you guys heard the story on this, we didn't cover it, but the CNBC debate was supposed to be, I think, originally 3 hours, but then Donald Trump bitched, and he was able to get it down to like 2 hours or something for the main debate. Because he made an argument that was so dumb. It was like, well, the Democrats on CNN got like 2 hours. Why can't we just do 2 hours or something? And, hello, idiot, there's fewer people on the stage for the Democrats. For the Republicans, there's many more people on stage. You need more time to hear everybody answer. God, he's so dumb. All right, I'll put that aside. I could rant for 15 minutes on that alone. So let's kick it off here with a privacy issue. We have some bad news coming out of Washington. Reuters reports, quote, the U.S. Senate easily passed legislation on Tuesday aimed at bolstering the country's cyber defenses, advancing the first serious attempt in Congress to combat computer hacks that have hit a growing number of businesses and government agencies in recent years. All right, so now, so far, so good. It sounds lovely, right? Oh, hey, we got to protect the Internet and stop cyber attacks. They continue here, quote, the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act, or CISA, is a proposal that languished in the Senate for several years, partly because of privacy concerns it would shuffle more personal information into the hands of the National Security Agency and other government spies. But business interests, including the Chamber of Commerce, have argued an information sharing law is necessary to allow the private sector to cooperate more closely with the government on detecting and minimizing cyber threats without fear of lawsuits. They say a round of amendments intended to strengthen some of the bill's privacy protections failed on Tuesday, as the bill's bipartisan sponsors warned last-minute changes could upset the balanced language that was the culmination of years of negotiations. Skeptics of CISA have said it would do little to prevent malicious breaches crippled Sony Pictures last year. All right, now, there you have the two so-called sides of this, where one side is saying, oh, we're just so concerned about defense and we don't want any more hacks to happen, and in order to do that, the corporations and the government have to combine their forces and work together, and don't worry about the details of it, bro, but we're just going to, you know, work hand in hand here, and isn't that just lovely? There's a term for it when corporations and the government work hand in hand. I think you know what that is. But if you're still skeptical as to what the actual effects of this will be, Wired Magazine puts it in perspective. They say, quote, the bill, as worded, lets a private company share with the Department of Homeland Security any information construed as a cybersecurity threat, notwithstanding any other provision of law. So that means that CISA trumps privacy laws like the Electronic Communication Privacy Act of 1986 and the Privacy Act of 1974, which restrict eavesdropping and sharing of user communications. Oh, I see exactly what this is. So, basically, this is a backdoor way of doing more NSA spying and more data gathering. Now, remember, the USA Freedom Act, as it was called, allegedly gave you back some of your privacy rights and made it so that, you know, the NSA can't collect everything anymore, and now there are stricter rules on it. Well, number one, that wasn't necessarily true. But number two, now we know that if they can't on their own, if the government cannot collect the information and store it in government facilities, so to speak, what this would do is make it so that the corporate facilities are effectively the same as government facilities. So this is just a way to skirt privacy rights and make it so that the process that was in place to deal with stuff like this is pushed aside. I mean, Edward Snowden's been doing a tweet storm about this for days now, where he's given every single detail of it. And basically, the way it works is, instead of having to go to an independent judiciary, a third party, to present evidence and say, hey, I need to spy on this person for this specific reason, so can I do it? Instead of having that in place, now you just remove that. And you say, well, I could present, you know, I could try to get a warrant to get information from one person, or I could just say, broadly speaking, because of this new law, that all of the corporate records are also my records by definition, and I don't need a warrant anymore. I'm just working together with the companies, and don't you dare tell me I can't do it, because if you tell me I can't do it, oh my goodness, you must be against cyber protection. You must be in favor of unwarranted and unmerited hacks on companies that don't deserve it. You must not care about cybersecurity. This is exactly what's happening here. Guys, you have to realize, it's never the case that when a government takes away your rights, they come out and say, we are now going to take away your rights. It's always masked in all kinds of bullshit like this, where they say, no, this is really about cybersecurity. This is exactly what they did with the Patriot Act. Take out the word cyber, just keep the word security there. They said, oh, no, oh, so, okay, we have to kind of ignore your constitutional rights and due process and habeas corpus and the Bill of Rights and all that. Don't worry about that, because we shouldn't care about that right now, because there's big, bad, scary Al-Qaeda out there, and there's terrorists out there, and they want to kill you, so give me your rights and shut the fuck up. And if you're against me, well, then you must be weak on terrorism. That was the argument that was used, right? And then over time, we learned what? Hey, wait a second. These motherfuckers just took our rights away from us. That's crazy. You can't do that just because of some existential circumstance. The whole idea of rights is that even when those circumstances come up, they are not debatable. That's why they're called rights and not suggestions. And that's why they're not privileges. When the going gets tough, that's when you stick to them more. That's why you don't need free speech protections when people are talking about how apple pie is delicious and they love mother. No, because everybody agrees with that, so you don't need to protect that. You need the free speech protections when people are doing speech that is controversial. When the KKK is doing a march through a predominantly black or Jewish town, and they're not doing any physical violence, but they're spreading a message of hate, that's when you need the free speech protections. And this is why the ACLU argued on the side of the KKK that time, because they realized the principle is more important than the fact that we disagree with their speech. And it's the same thing for privacy rights. Oh, no, big bad cybersecurity threats. Therefore, a corporation and government should mesh together. And when you sign up with a corporation for one reason or another and you give them your private information, now the implicit security that you had with that corporation where you think and you know, hey, they're not going to give my information to anybody else, now that's out the window. Now that information is definitely going to the government. In fact, just the fact that the corporation is storing your information means that the government has access to it, because that's what stuff like this does. That's what this bill does. And it's not just me using the word backdoor to describe this. That's exactly the word Edward Snowden's been using. They're saying it's a backdoor way to take more of your private information without presenting a warrant, without having probable cause to do so. So no, this isn't a fucking debatable thing, man. We have to stand up and fight. We have to make sure that people realize our rights are not debatable. I said the same thing when it came to terrorist threats. This idea that the system that we put in place wasn't good enough to begin with, fuck no, of course it was. The whole idea was, if you have evidence and you think person X is a terrorist, present it to a judge, they'll say, here's a warrant, and you can spy all fucking day long. That's the way it works in a civilized society. The government can't just say, I want to spy on this person and that person and that person based on nothing. Because what happens when they do spy on people based on nothing and they don't present evidence to an independent judiciary? They're going to spy on whoever the fuck they want for whatever reason they want. And people are only people, and they have biases and they have power issues. So then what ends up happening? As we learned from the Snowden leaks, people were spying on their ex-boyfriends and girlfriends. The government was spying on communications that they had absolutely no right to spy on. And it got so absurd to the point where they would spy on, for example, Xbox Live and, you know, different games because they, ooh, the Taliban might be communicating this way. Now, were they really doing that? No. But they wanted to get as much information as possible because with information comes power. If you have dirt on your opponents, if you know that Elliot Spitzer is sleeping with hookers, well, then when he wants to be the sheriff of Wall Street, as was his nickname, and he wants to crack down on them and look out for the people, well, you discredit him. Hey, look, he likes to pay to get his pee-pee touched. There, his career over. Look at what happened. They even said, we know because they said it, the NSA likes to spy on porn habits to discredit radicalizers. That was the term they used. So this isn't about security. We're all in favor of security. You have to have security the right way through a process because that's what civilized countries do. This isn't about actual security. This is about the government taking more of your private information and using it in nefarious ways. Okay. Now let's go to Lindsey Graham. Oh, boy. So we're switching topics rather abruptly here, but that's all right. Senator Lindsey Graham is continuing to embarrass himself on the campaign trail. There was a bar event yesterday in preparation for tonight's Republican debate hosted by CNN, and he painfully and awkwardly tried to get people to like him by changing his strategy and his persona. So now he's trying to be Mr. Van Wilder. He's trying to be the life of the party because he realizes, hey, I'm doing terrible in the polls, so it can't hurt. Let me try to be that guy, and then maybe people go, ha-ha, I'm liking the happy-go-lucky party guy. I'm with that guy. So that was his plan. Now, before I continue here, let me just say as a side note, this should be a red flag to begin with that CNN is hosting some sort of party before the debate with, and they invited all the different Republican candidates. The whole idea of having a free media, a free press, is that they're supposed to hold people in power accountable. Not supposed to be chummy with them and having parties with them, because then what's going to happen? They're not going to be really critical of them when they need to be really critical of them. That's a whole other conversation that we can spend 10 minutes or 30 minutes on at another time. But for now, let's just laugh at Lindsey Graham. So Huffington Post reports, quote, immediately upon entering Walnut Brewery in downtown Boulder, where CNN hosted a pre-debate party for GOP officials and the media, Graham turned his sights on the bar. Along with CNN host Dana Bash, Graham proceeded to pour glasses of liquor and beer to excited customers who rushed forward at the chance to be served by a presidential candidate. The only problem, Graham appeared unable to correctly pour a beer. Over and over, the senator produced a glass with excessive foam. Who wants this one? Graham yelled at one point. Only by silence. Oh, that's so sad. So you guys know the deal. You pour a beer a certain way, you get way too much foam. You got to, like, tip the glass and pour it slowly, and you know the deal. I'm sure bartenders out there are saying, really, dude, Lindsey, you didn't know that? Like, what's wrong with you? But he kept doing it. You know, all right, I'll have the beer. I'm crazy. I'm wacky. Aren't I? Vote for me, please. People are like, yeah, no, I don't want that beer. I'll take a different beer. I won't take that beer. So they continue here, and they say, he took it in stride, however, jovially playing the star behind the bar. Quote, I don't drink very well, as you can tell from the bar, he said at one point. Reflecting on his campaign, he noted his low position in the polls. We're at 2%. I think we're peaking too soon. We're going to have to cut back on our spending, Graham cracked. Oh, stop. Stop, Lindsey. He's joking around behind the bar. He's like, ah, cool, right? I'm at 2%. I don't want to peak too early. Who wants this drink? It's all foam. Who wants it? Oh, Lindsey, stop. Now, you ready for the world's most devastating fact check? He's not at 2%. He's at 1%. When I read the article, I said, no, I don't even think that's true. I smelled the bullshit. I went to Real Clear Politics. There's one poll that has him at 2%, to be fair. That's the highest one. But then when you average out all the others, there's more of him at 0%, and I guess one or two of him at 1%. The average of his polls is 1%. God, when you have to embellish to get to 2%, you know your campaign isn't going well. All right, they continue here. A game of date, marry, or disappear forever followed next. Now, this is really fuck, marry, or kill. That's the real game. They had to sanitize it because, oh, wacky Lindsey Graham at CNN. Oh, gotta keep it PG. So a game of date, marry, or disappear forever followed next. Ask which of these people, Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, or Carly Fiorina, he would date, marry, or disappear forever. Graham initially resisted, joking that he didn't know we're going to do the Mormon thing here. You get it? Because it's multiple women, not just one. He believes in one man, one woman. He's not gay. What? Oh, did I say that out loud? Finally, he said he would date Palin, marry Fiorina, quote, because she's rich. Asked by Bash if that meant he would disappear Clinton, Graham shot back, no, is she rich? Because she said she was flat broke. You get it? Because the Clintons, they make a lot of money. There was that one time she had the Gaffins that were broke. So, oh, got him, Lindsey. Maybe you'll move up to 1.8%. God, Lindsey, stop. Just stop. The entire time I'm reading this, I'm cringing. And you know why it gets under my skin so much? Because Lindsey Graham is the antithesis of Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is a guy who cares deeply about the policy substance and the American people, and he actually wants to do the thing that Trump always said, oh, make the country great again. No, he actually wants to do that, as evidenced by everything he's ever said, all of his policy positions, how passionate he is, and the list goes on and on. Lindsey Graham is a guy who's, oh, my God, he's just in it for narcissism, and he's in it because he wants more power, and he's willing to try anything to get to that goal. And look, Hillary Clinton does this a lot too, unfortunately, where she's so obsessed with power. There's a story in the news a few days ago about how Hillary, over time, started to change the rhetoric of what happened in the debate, and she's implying that Bernie Sanders is sexist because Bernie Sanders said something like, we shouldn't. Oh, I mean, what are we going to do? Just yell about gun policy? We need to care about solutions, and the solutions are X, Y, and Z. And she changed that over time to, some people say that women shouldn't shout, women shouldn't yell, and she's referencing that part of the debate, trying to make it seem like he's sexist, imply that he's sexist. I mean, those are the tactics of narcissistic psychopaths who only care about more power and getting it into control by any means necessary. So it's not about the issues, it's not about the substance, it's not about the people, it's not about the ideas, it's not about the concepts. It's about what do I need to do to win? Tell me what I need to do to win, because I'm not viewing this as trying to be the best and do good for America. I'm just viewing this as I want to win. I want to win. So no matter what fucking disgusting mud-flinging tactics, I'm going to do them. Hillary Clinton does it like that. And then you have Lindsey Graham, who's like, well, I'm clearly way too boring. Nobody's interested in me. So I don't know. I'll try to be Van Wilder. Who wants a beer? Fuck, marry, or kill. That's not the Mormon game to play. And here's the final point to this that I wanted to throw out there. I guarantee you that every single thing was planted. Like when they say when they want to play date, marry, or disappear, fuck, marry, or kill, I guarantee you his campaign was working with the crowd and working with CNN. They're like, okay, we're going to plant the question of fuck, marry, or kill, and then he's going to answer it. And then he'll make the headlines, and there'll be articles about him because he's so wacky, and he's like Van Wilder, and ooh, he drinks. There's another part where they describe he took a shot with one of the camera guys or something. He was one of the guys was like, hey, you want to have one of those shots? He's like, yeah, sure, let's do it. We'll just make people vote for me. Oh, that shot, I'm crazy. Oh, vote for me. You're so sad. You're so sad. We all see right through you. We know that you're not, and normally you wouldn't be out there at a bar in fucking Boulder talking to people, serving drinks, playing fucking college games and shit. It's all so planned and it smells funky. Stop it. You're an adult. You're embarrassing yourself more when you do stuff like this. The 1% poll numbers are bad enough, but when you do stuff like this, you lose your pride. You lose your integrity. You shouldn't even be able to look yourself in the mirror when you do this. Oh, man. There will be many tweets later on mocking Lindsey Graham. Well, I already threw one out there. I had to do it. I had to fucking do it, man. I didn't want to do it. I had to do it. I said something like, he's putting on, they're already putting on his makeup now for later tonight. He picked pink plush rouge for his cheeks. He needs to look pretty. That fucked up with me. Look, honestly, I don't think it's fucked up. Number one, we're joking. Number two, Lindsey Graham's voting record is horrendous. So when you are against gay people, but it seems pretty fucking clear to everybody you're deep in that closet, we should fucking talk about it. Okay? It's a different thing completely if we're talking about somebody who's not a politician. It's a different thing if we're talking about a politician who has the right voting record. They stand up for gay rights, but they're personally gay, but they're in the closet. That's a different thing. I probably wouldn't joke about that. But when it's Lindsey Graham with, his track record and all that, oh man, you're fucking open season, son. Open season all day long. Random side note here, by the way. Apparently this is in Boulder. I wonder if the thin air is going to affect anybody. I mean, it's a Republican debate, so they're all going to appear not bright anyway because they're not bright. But the thin air, I'm very curious. You guys remember the Romney and Obama debate where it was in Colorado and it was at high altitude, and Obama really sucked a fat one. Al Gore had made a comment like, that happened because he like arrived that day to Colorado. The air is thin, and when the air is thin, you got to get used to the breathing. It's harder to breathe. It's harder to, think straight. I now, looking back on that now, I really do think that that might have been something going on there. Because I don't know if you guys remember, Obama got fucking hammered in that debate. Fucking hammered. I think it was the second debate. And it looked like something was off. He didn't look right, And then obviously in the next debate, he proceeded to
Blog Talk Radio.
of a bitch, we're back. Randomly, I don't know why we got disconnected. I spoke to Blog Talk Radio, and hopefully everything is good now. Hopefully you can hear me. They fucked up somehow. That was weird, man, because it showed that I was still connected and doing the show when I wasn't connected and doing the show. We were just talking about government surveillance. No, I'll climb out of my conspiracy tree here, but that was weird. So I had to restart the show. Hopefully all you guys are still there. I actually don't know. I'm looking in the chat room right now to see if everybody's there. Sorry for this gigantic fuck-up. But the show must go on whether or not you guys can hear me, so I got to do what I got to do here. Hopefully you can hear me. I guess we'll find out later. The UN General Assembly on Tuesday called for an end to the U.S. embargo on Cuba. The final vote was 191 to 2. The only two that were against it, would you like to take a guess? Israel and the U.S. So the Times of Israel reports, quote, "They voted against the non-binding resolution, but a resounding 191 countries supported the measure in the 193-member assembly, the highest number ever. The outcome was a diplomatic victory for Cuba, which has branded the embargo the main obstacle to its economic development and called for immediate steps to end it. Cuba estimates damage from what it terms a blockade to reach more than $830 billion. That's amazing to think that the embargo has cost Cuba that much. And remember, they're not doing horribly given that. I'm not saying Cuba's, you know, a fantastic place in every way, shape, and form. It's some sort of utopia. No. But what I am saying is, goddamn, $830 billion that was basically held back from their economy, and they're still doing as well as they are, that's rather impressive. In his remarks, U.S. diplomat Ron Goddard, they continue, said the United States could not support the text because it did not reflect the significant steps taken and the spirit of engagement President Obama has championed. Quote, "If Cuba thinks this exercise will move things forward in the direction that both governments have indicated they wish, it is mistaken." All right, I love that comment for how Orwellian it is. Because we did a deal with Cuba to try to make it so that they have some sanctions relief and, you know, we get some reforms in return, and it's just opening a line of communication between the two. And what they're saying here is, well, I mean, come on, if they think that by ending economic sanctions, we're going to, like, end economic sanctions, what, are they crazy? No, that's exactly what the deal was about. And now when it comes time to go to the UN and make it official at an international level, the U.S. and Israel are like, no, no, no. Even though we made a deal with you where that's the goal, we're still going to vote even symbolically in favor of the embargo at the international level. God, it's so frustrating because that's the thing. Even when the U.S. does the right thing, we can't go all the way and do the full right thing. And that's the difference also between the Democrats and the Republicans. On the Republican side, what do you get? Continued embargo, continued sanctions, no treaty, no conversation, no line of communication, no nothing. But with the Democrats, what do you get? Half measure. Okay, let's open up a line of communication. Let's figure some things out. Let's talk. But, oh, when it comes time to go all the way, and you got to go to the UN? No, now vote in favor of the embargo because, God forbid, we do the right thing in every way. That would be crazy. All right. All right, now let's go to Reuters and talk a little bit about what's going on in Turkey. This is really important. Reuters is reporting that there's unrest in Turkey. Quote, "Turkish police stormed the offices of an opposition media company on Wednesday, days before an election, in a crackdown on companies linked to a U.S.-based cleric and foe of President Erdogan. Brawls broke out and police fired a water cannon to disperse around 500 people who gathered in front of the offices of Kanal Türk and Bugün TV in Istanbul to protest against the police action. They say the authorities on Tuesday took over 22 companies in an investigation of alleged financial irregularities. All right, so this is authoritarianism 101. This is silence the opposition, silence your political opponents and critics. And if you think that's not, listen to this. Quote, the mainstream Hurriyet News website said on Wednesday a court case had been opened in the southeastern city of Diyarbakir against two cousins aged 12 and 13 who ripped down a poster of Erdogan from a billboard in the city under the charge of insulting the president. They face up to 4 years and 8 months in prison. Wow. So look at what's happening, man. This has been the problem from day one with a guy like Erdogan, although he's progressively gotten worse and worse, is that this guy is deeply power-hungry. He's a Muslim fundamentalist in his own right. He's had horrendous policies. He's made some viciously anti-woman comments. He's, of course, cracked down on the Kurds. He's used ISIS as an excuse to crack down on the Kurds, the Kurds who are fighting ISIS, mind you. And this guy has a strong authoritarian streak. Previously, he's shut down Twitter and YouTube when things on there pissed him off. Like, he learned about some video that insulted Atatürk on YouTube. He's like, okay, ban YouTube. Now, over time, like, he brings it back every once in a while. But still, every now and then, he's like, this thing on Twitter pisses me off. Shut it down. And now he's doing it 22 different opposition media outlets. He just shut down. And I love how he's doing it with this facade. Like, he's still pretending that, no, this is all about financial irregularities. I got news for you. If there's some financial problem at, you know, 22 different media corporations, even in the U.S., what happens? The IRS knocks on the door. You have a government meeting. You go to court. Something like that. You don't fucking go with armed people, bust down the doors, and shut it down. You know who does that? Dictators do that. Authoritarians do that. And to the point that you're locking up 12 and 13-year-olds for daring to take down a poster of you, and the charge is insulting the president, there you're not even trying to mask it. At least when it came to doing it with the media companies, you're masking it and saying, oh, this is really about financial irregularities. When it comes to the kids, you're just like, no, they insulted me, so now I'm going to arrest them for insulting me. Well, then how can the media do anything but, by definition, spew your propaganda? And that's the point. That's what he wants, is a media that only spews his propaganda, gives no opposing point of view, to the point where he cracks down using armed people when people disagree with him. Guys, what this shows me is, I don't know what the fuck's going to happen in this Turkish election, but he's not supposed to do well. Experts are saying it's not going to go well for Erdogan and his party, the AKP. Is it possible that he tries one way or another way of rigging the results? I mean, if this is any indication, absolutely that's something he would do. I mean, it's getting scary, man. Turkey for a long time was known as, okay, it's the relatively secular Muslim nation, and they're the poster child for the success of that. Well, now with a guy like Erdogan in power, that may be slipping away, or it may already be gone. Because when you start arresting people for tearing down a poster of you, kids, and you give them jail time, or you're about to give them jail time, when you start storming all the opposition newspapers, we've seen this before, and it's not pretty how it ends up. Okay. I do believe that everything's working now. Knock on wood. All right. Blah, 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 blah. All right, let's go to some free speech hypocrisy. How does that sound? How does that sound? So in the wake of the Charlie Hebdo terrorist attacks, people in the West rightly rallied on the side of free speech, and they made the case that it doesn't even matter what you're saying, as long as you're not doing direct threats of violence, you have the right to say it. And we shouldn't give an inch on this important principle and this right. Well, The Intercept has a great article laying out the hypocritical stance that many people take when it comes to freedom of expression. Unfortunately, with a lot of people, the idea only goes as far as things that they agree with. But the second you cross the line and something you don't necessarily agree with, well, then, you know, our adherence to free speech is murky. So you guys know I have been crystal clear from day one. I've done segments just flat out arguing in favor of a lunatic like Pam Geller. Pam Geller is a right-wing hack who did this Muslim, this anti-Muslim Draw Muhammad contest. And when it got shot up, everything I said was in support of Pam Geller. Why? Because I don't give a fuck that she's a loathsome human being. She has a right to do that. And nobody has a right to physically attack them for drawing Muhammad. Regardless of what you think of her as a person, the value, the principle of free speech rises above my personal dislike of a person like Pam Geller. So we're totally consistent on this. But unfortunately, not everybody is, and people buckle given what the topic is that we're discussing. So with that being said, here's part of the Intercept article. Quote, "The absurdity of France's celebrating itself for free expression was vividly highlighted by this week's decision from the nation's highest court, one that is a direct assault on basic free speech rights. The French High Court upheld the criminal conviction of 12 political activists for the crime of advocating sanctions and a boycott against Israel as a means of ending the decades-long military occupation of Palestine. What did these French criminals do? This, the individuals arrived at the supermarket wearing shirts emblazoned with the words, 'Long live Palestine, boycott Israel.' They also handed out flyers that said that buying Israeli products means legitimizing crimes in Gaza. In France, the self-proclaimed land of liberty, doing that makes you a criminal. As the Forward reported, the court, quote, cited the French Republic's law on freedom of the press, which prescribes imprisonment or a fine of up to $50,000 for parties that provoke discrimination, hatred, or violence towards a person or group of people on grounds of their origin, their belonging, or their not belonging to an ethnic group, a nation, a race, or a certain religion. Because BDS is inherently, quote, discriminatory, said the court, it is a crime to advocate it. The odious campaign to outlaw activism against the Israeli occupation extends well beyond France. In May, Canadian officials threatened to prosecute BDS activists there under hate speech laws. The February Haaretz article described this troubling event in the UK. Quote, in 2007, the British University and College Union said it would drop plans to boycott Israeli institutions after legal advisors.
Blog Talk Radio.
If you're hearing me, it's quite obvious that Blog Talk Radio is having massive issues today. I apologize for that. It's 100% out of my control. Nothing I can do about it, but this will be the last time that I try to reconnect without just dropping the live show and doing everything for YouTube. So, last attempt. I apologize again, guys. Nothing I can do about it. They're fucking up here big time. But with that being said, let's move along here to Michael Savage and mock him viciously, perhaps. And that will bring a smile to my face and make it so that everything's okay. Conservative radio host Michael Savage went on Newsmax TV, and he explained what he thinks the Black Lives Matter movement is.
About the Black Lives Matter, we have another incident in a school in South Carolina. Teacher said to the kid, put down your cell phone, stop talking, no. They called the principal, put it down, no. I'm calling the cop. Cop comes in, put it down or I'll drag you out of your seat, no. So the cop drags her out of the seat. Now the FBI is investigating. Black Lives Matter, they chant in the streets, you've seen it, and they don't denounce it, the leadership. Put things in a blanket, fry them like bacon. Where the heck are we heading?
The Black Lives Matter movement, and I'm going to say it like it is, are Obama's shock troops. They're the brown shirts that Hitler had in Germany. How's that? Does that work for you? Never forget what Hitler did in the beginning. He used street thugs that he gave uniforms to, brown shirts and ties, to beat people up with clubs, to intimidate the police, to cause a total takeover of civil society. Make no mistake about it. This is the secret private army that Barack Hussein Obama has been talking about. That's what they're building.
I have a very simple question for Michael Savage. When the Black Lives Matter movement proceeds to not become the brown shirts, to not be the Gestapo, to not be the SS, to not hold white people prisoner and shove them into concentration camps, is he going to come out and apologize and say, hey, my bad, I misread the situation, it is what it is, won't happen again, I won't mess up, sorry? No, it's never going to happen, because it's not about truth. It's about spreading propaganda. How can anybody in their right mind think that Black Lives Matter are like Hitler's brown shirts, Hitler's thugs? You know what the Black Lives Matter people are calling for? Equality and justice. That's what they want. That's not just my opinion on it either. Look at Campaign Zero, which is their official document and their policy positions and what they're fighting for. They say, we want to put an end to police abuse. We want to demilitarize the police to make it so that they can still have guns, but they shouldn't have, you know, vehicles that are made to withstand the fucking gigantic machine guns. They shouldn't have body armor like you do when you're in the middle of a conflict, when you're in the middle of a war. This is what they're fighting for. They're fighting for prosecutors to be appointed by the federal government so that when a cop does something wrong, it's not his buddy, the prosecutor, who has to go after him, which he's not going to do. They want justice. They're fighting for justice. They're fighting for rights. But he makes it seem like, no, they have no point, and they're brown shirts, so they're evil. Well, what are you supposed to do if you're talking about the brown shirts here, Michael Savage? How do you handle that appropriately? I mean, what did the U.S. do against Hitler's army? We know it. They fought a war against them. They killed them. So would you be in favor of doing that with the Black Lives Matter people? Hey, you're the one that said they're like the brown shirts. I didn't say it. You said it. And also, this idea of, as Steve Malzberg was laying out there at the beginning, say, oh, I mean, come on. They slammed a girl. And obviously, you got to be on the side of the cops. I saw the video. I saw the situation leading up to what happened. It was a girl who wouldn't get off her phone or leave class when she was told to. So a police officer body slammed her and threw her like a fucking rag doll. Genuinely unbalanced dude doing something that was crazy and in abuse of power. And he's default siding with the police officer. Well, how can you do that? No, you know how it is they do that? Because they're the tribalists. They point the finger at Black Lives Matter, and they think, oh my God, you guys are so tribal, and you don't care about truth, and you don't care about what's right. But no, that's all projection, because that's what they're guilty of. They're the tribalists. Anybody who looks at that video of the fully grown man slamming a high school girl because she wouldn't get off her phone or leave the class, and you side with him, you're the tribalist. That was obviously excessive force. And you guys are saying they're tribalists, and you called them the brown shirts. You said they're like the Nazis when they're fighting for justice, and their platform is all about justice and equality. So you're the one that's smearing them, misrepresenting them, and you're the tribalists who are accusing them of tribalism. It's all immensely and supremely ironic. All right, let me take a break here, and then when we come back, we'll finish up the show with... I still got a bunch of stuff because all these fucking setbacks with the technology here, but when we come back, we'll get into Fox News bias on this situation where a police officer slammed a high school girl, Ben Carson's religious beliefs, and Mike Tyson endorsed somebody for president. Oh boy, that ought to be interesting. All right, stay right there, guys.
Just lost his pain. What did he?
son of a bitch. All right, we're back. Hope you guys can hear me. Although, who the fuck knows today? All right. Fox News. Fox News had a discussion about the high school girl who was tossed across the room by an officer, and their bias is so immensely apparent here that this clip is basically a study in bias.
Let's not be ridiculous. People need to actually be responsible for their own actions, and if you look at that video, do you notice that none of the other students get out of their desk? You don't hear anything. You don't hear any screaming. You don't hear them say stop or anything else. You kind of wonder if the students weren't on the side of the deputy, that she was that disruptive, that obnoxious, that they didn't have any problem with what was going on. And the other thing you said, Sean, the altercation doesn't look good, but those desks, she was probably flailing about, and once she threw herself backwards, the officer is now in a position where he's got to get her out of that desk and get her in handcuffs because the situation is escalated by her choice.
Yeah, in other words, her rhetoric, her talking back, et cetera.
But there was another student who stood up and was arrested.
But the media never talks about what leads up to this, the whole story. You know what I'm saying?
I understand completely, and we talked about this over the summer, the incident in Texas at the pool party, where we did talk about the entire story. I think the fundamental issue here is about restoring civility in society. I understand the concerns of Black Lives Matter, of Blue Lives Matter, of All Lives Matter. I don't think that we're going to have a conversation that we're going to come together until incidents like this stop happening. And
but
that happens
first. Who precipitated it?
She did absolutely.
Who was non-compliant?
She was not. But that doesn't mean that if the officer used excessive force, that justifies it. Adults are supposed to lead by example.
And it wasn't excessive.
And we'll find
it.
You don't know if it was excessive yet. The investigation, we haven't seen the results of the investigation. And the sheriff himself asked.
I'll tell you why it's not excessive. He verbalized. He made contact. He verbalized. He was polite. He requested her. He verbally did that. The next level is he put a hand on her. She escalated it from there. He used soft control.
That looks like soft control to you? That looks like soft control to you. He said she escalated it. She escalated it. Yeah, by using her words, she escalated it. Why is what he did not a clear escalation? And Furman said that he was polite. On what planet is that polite? Now, understand, that guy who was just talking at the end there, this is a Fox News expert. It's Mark Furman. You remember Mark Furman? He was in the OJ case, and we learned that he is a raging racist. Now, putting aside whether or not OJ was innocent or guilty, because that's a separate conversation, and we could have a long discussion on that, Mark Furman was caught on tape saying the word nigger at least 40 times. Fox News is like, that's our expert. He's going to be an objective guy to talk about criminal justice issues and policing and racial situations. Here you have a white officer, huge, a grown man, and a high school girl who's black, and here's this objective source who loves to throw around the N-word like it's nothing, saying, black girl's fault. Oh, well, excuse me if I don't exactly believe your opinion on this. And I love how he frames it like his opinion is a fact. This is not excessive force. It's not excessive force. That's your opinion. And your opinion is weak as fuck. Your argument was he was polite. He used, soft power? Something like that? That's mind-numbingly silly. And it oozes. The segment oozes of bias. Look at what Hannity said. He said the media never talks about what leads up to this. No, but they did. Everybody's been talking about it. And let's keep it in perspective. In what circumstance is that kind of force okay? I would say if she threatened direct violence against him or if she pulled out some sort of weapon and was going to use it against him. That's not what happened. Now, they go on to say, well, she threw the first punch. I'm not kidding. Some people are actually arguing that. No, but guys, we have eyes. We can see. That's just not what happened. That's in no way, shape, or form did that happen. So what are we left with here? We're left with people who are saying, believe me over your lying eyes. Sean Hannity said the media never talks about what leads up to this. So in other words, are you saying that this is okay, Sean? Is this okay with you? And look at the overall Fox News hypocrisy. Remember when Cliven Bundy was on the ranch refusing to pay his taxes? He owes over $1 million to the government, and he's a freeloader, and he's a moocher? So federal agents showed up. What happened then? You had Bundy and his right-wing pricks start pointing guns at federal agents. And what did these guys say then? They're like, oh, yeah, good Americans standing up for their rights, not going to be pushed around by law enforcement. That's what a good American does. Now look at the situation here and flip it with the entire Black Lives Matter movement. What does Hannity argue now? Oh, my God, I can't believe that these guys aren't listening to law enforcement. You got to have respect in this country. You got to understand the legitimate authority. You can't be rabble-rousers like this. You can't question the system all the time. So look at the two different cases. It shows you perfectly just how biased they are when it's right-wing old white people who are standing up against law enforcement. They love it when it's young black people who are doing it, even when it's a benign case of a young black girl who's saying, I'm not going to get off my phone, number one, or get up from my chair, number two. And that's not, like, I'm not in favor of that, right? But that's not an appropriate response to that. That's what the obvious, reply is. You can't just fucking body slam somebody, throw them across the room. It's a young girl, and you're a gigantic grown man. And then finally, I'll leave you with this. Made up, he goes, students might be on the cop side. Actually, we know, some of the students have spoken about this, they say they're terrified of that guy, and he's crazy. And he's had two other instances of allegations of excessive force against him. And when Furman says, people need to be responsible for their own actions, that's so perfect. Because again, it shows you this incredible right-wing bias. People need to be responsible for their own actions, but he's only saying that in response to the girl who didn't get off her phone or get up. He doesn't say that about the cop. He's justifying every single thing he did there. So he doesn't need to be responsible for his actions. No. He gets a pass. The reason he did it is, oh, my God, his hangnail was hanging off, and he was trying to be nice, and he used soft control, and he was polite. Every excuse in the book for him, for her, you need to follow orders. You need to be responsible for your own actions. No rules for the cops, rules for everybody else. That's how Mark Furman thinks. No rules for me, no rules for me and my Republican old white men buddies, rules for everybody else. This is why you always lose in the realm of ideas, guys, because your ideas suck. All right, next. The International Business Times is reporting on Ben Carson's religious beliefs, and they confirmed, something that's been long suspected in liberal circles. This is something we've been saying amongst ourselves for a while now. So Carson is a Seventh-day Adventist, and IBT reports, quote, unlike most Christians, Seventh-day Adventists observe the Sabbath on Saturday. The church embraces a literal view of the Bible. Quote, we believe that the biblical events recorded in the Bible, we believe that the biblical events recorded in Genesis 1:11, including the special creation of human beings, are historical and recent, that the 7 days of creation were literal 24-hour days forming a literal week, and that the flood was global in nature. This is what it says on the church's official website. And Carson says he accepts the church's teaching. The church's founder, William Miller, was a Baptist preacher from upstate New York who claimed Jesus Christ would return to earth on October 22, 1844. The Seventh-day Adventist Church now has more than 18 million members globally and 1.2 million in North America. Followers claim they are waiting for the second coming and the end of the world. So they're waiting for Armageddon. They're waiting for the apocalypse. They can't wait for it. And look at, I love that line because it's so telling. They say that their founder, the founder of the church, said that Jesus would return on October 22nd, 1844. Hello? Do you guys not realize that he didn't? He didn't come back. Why are you still in the church? You've been proven wrong. Your faith is incorrect. It's been demonstrated. And they're like, no, we're Seventh-day Adventists. But what do you mean? But he didn't come back in 1844. It just didn't happen. Yeah, but we believe that he did, or he's going to. But that already happened, and he didn't. Like, no, but that, this is what we believe. Oh my God, but this is just like you're not, this is like you're not getting that 2 + 2 = 4. We're saying it does, and you're like, agree to disagree. But you don't agree, that doesn't make sense. Okay, I get a headache just thinking about this. Carson has said his faith has guided him in the past. Before surgery, he said he would ask for God's help. Quote, Lord, you be the neurosurgeon, he has described himself thinking. I'll be the hands. Okay, come on, dude. No, but that, see, now you're starting to get kind of dangerous here. Because if he takes that literally, then what if he, like, stops performing the actions he's supposed to? And he's just like, oh, God will take over. Imagine the pilot who says, I'm not going to touch the actual gadgets in the cockpit here and on the plane. I want God to land the plane. What would you do? You go, no, land it. You know how to do it. Land it. Don't trust God. What are you talking about? That's crazy. But this is what he says with neurosurgery. I'd be like, well, he's a good neurosurgeon. God's going to do his hands for him. I don't see what the problem is. But if he really believes that, do you not understand? He's off his rocker. That's not a normal person. All right, but I saved the best for last. He also said he was, quote, proud of the fact that I believe what God has said, and I believe in a literal 6-day creation. Benny boy. Oh, Benny boy. This guy's a neurosurgeon. He believes in creationism. He believes in a literal 6-day creation. He believes the world is 6,000 years old. He doesn't believe in evolution. How are you a neurosurgeon and that's the case? No, I'm sorry. This guy, there's a chance he's, you know, I don't know what the right medical term is. Is it savant? Where you're really amazing, just incredible in this one area, and in every other area he's below, way below average. Because I don't know how else to make sense of this. Everything we hear about him is on every other issue except neurosurgery. He doesn't know anything. I'm surprised he could tie his fucking shoes. No, this guy is leading in some polls in some early primary states. Ironically, God help us if he becomes president. All right, more. Raw Story is reporting that a Saudi prince got caught yet again being rather naughty, let's say. So they say the following, quote, Saudi Prince Abdel Mohsen bin Walid bin Abdulaziz, I love that name, and 4 associates were caught at the Beirut airport attempting to carry 2 tons of Captagon pills into Saudi Arabia, as well as a quantity of cocaine. Captagon is the brand name for fentanyl, which is a combination of the stimulants amphetamine and theophylline. Sources in the Middle East say Captagon is fueling fighters on both sides of Syria's bloody civil war. So understand that this is on top of one Saudi Arabian guy, Prince, I believe, recently smuggling literal tons of drugs on his plane, and one caught doing repeated sexual assaults. They say, quote, last week in Los Angeles, 29-year-old Majed Abdulaziz Al-Saud was arrested on suspicion of forced oral copulation and other charges. Al-Saud is accused by 3 anonymous female employees of going on a violent debauch rampage in which he attacked male and female aides and houseworkers, forcing them to strip on command and perform sex acts against their will. Last week, neighbors spotted a naked, bleeding woman frantically trying to scale the 8-foot fence around Al Saud's Beverly Hills compound. They helped the woman escape and called police. By Thursday, Al Saud, who is the son of Saudi Arabia's late King Abdullah, was free on a $300,000 bail. Gee, I wonder if it was anybody else, if they'd still be in jail. The arrests echo other instances of wealthy Saudis running afoul of the law, including the case of 27-year-old Mansour Al-Shamari. Al-Shamari was apprehended at the U.S.-Mexican border attempting to flee the country to escape prosecution on rape charges in Utah. In 2013, a Saudi princess named Meshael Aleban, I know I'm butchering that, but what are you going to do, was arrested in Irvine, California, on charges that she imprisoned and abused a Kenyan house servant. The L.A. Times said that the victim accused Aleban of imprisoning her and treating her as slave labor. In 2010, a wealthy Saudi couple was accused of torturing a 49-year-old Sri Lankan maid by hammering 24 hot nails into her flesh when she complained about her workload. Also in 2010, Saudi Prince Saud bin Abdulaziz bin Nasir Al Saud was jailed for life after bludgeoning his manservant to death in London. During Nasir Al Saud's trial, it came to light that the man he murdered was also his partner. The BBC noted that the 34-year-old prince spent more of his time in court arguing that he isn't gay than he did denying the murder. Okay, I'm sensing a wee bit of a pattern here with how Saudi royalty acts when they're in the U.S. They fucking run buck wild, son. No, but the part of this that you get under your skin more than anything else is anybody held responsible for this? No, they're our oil butt buddy. We jack them off daily, and oil squirts out. And we go, oh, yeah, I want to bathe in that. This is our relationship with Saudi Arabia. And so then when we send them back there, they get in trouble there. As if the rules would apply to the ruling class the same as they would apply to anybody else in Saudi Arabia. That's who should be the most pissed about this. The people of Saudi Arabia. Motherfucker, you smuggle in drugs, you have gay sex, you know, you come out as an atheist, you are an apostate, and the list goes on and on. You do sorcery or witchcraft. They put you to death. They fucking behead you. If you're a Shia activist, Al Nimr, what are they going to do with him? Behead him and crucify him. So you're one of the normal peasants. Oh, you get the death penalty for sneezing. Did you fart? I'm going to give you the death penalty. I'm going to behead your ass. But when it's one of their own, they can do anything. And what are the consequences? Nothing. Because the same rules don't apply to them. They don't give a fuck about the rules. No, this should piss off everybody. It is a backwards, theocratic, Salafist state. And meanwhile, the people who are in the royal family, they're like, oh no, those rules don't apply to me. They apply to everybody else. So when people say perhaps religion is a tool to control people, this is a clear case of it. All right, I got two more stories left. And then it's time to, I'll be editing and live tweeting the GOP debate, which I believe starts at 6. And hope you guys follow along. So there are Halloween costumes that are causing some controversy at the moment. One is a child IDF soldier, and the other is an Arab sheik's nose. Now, this happens pretty much every year that there's some costumes that piss somebody off, and then they protest it, and they try to get it pulled from the stores and all that stuff. So let me give you some more background information on this. The International Business Times reports, quote, Walmart has decided to pull its Israeli soldier costume for children and the Sheikh Fagin nose from store shelves and its website. The decision was welcomed by the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. Quote, the costumes are very problematic and defensive to many people. The Israeli forces are responsible for the continued death and occupation of the Palestinian people. Such a symbol of fear, violence, and a long history of dispossession should not be used for entertainment purposes. Then you have ADC President Samir Khalaf said, according to a news release, quote, selling merchandise which mocks Arabs or any other race or ethnicity must not be tolerated. These images do nothing but perpetuate racist tropes that have long been used to demonize, otherize, and alienate Arab communities throughout history. The ADC, the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, and the U.S. Palestinian Community Network called on Walmart, Amazon, eBay, and Sears to remove the costumes earlier Tuesday, and ADC said it would continue to pressure Amazon, eBay, and Sears to remove the items immediately. All right, so let's think about this here and break this down. Now, there are all different kinds of costumes that offend all different kinds of people. I mean, that's a fact. We talk about it year in and year out. And are there some that I would say, yes, I'm offended by that, or I don't like that? Sure. I think we all have some kind of line somewhere where we go, that's just tasteless. But the real question is, what do we do in response to that? And I'm one who says, across the board, everybody let it go. Now, again, I'm not speaking to if somebody is offended by this in particular or offended by something else. You're offended by a KKK costume or a Nazi costume or a Taliban costume. Remember Chris Brown wore that, you know, a few years ago. Or you're offended by there was a bunch of Trayvon costumes when Trayvon was murdered. And the list goes on and on. Now they have one of Caitlyn Jenner with basically female dress but a dick on it. There's one of the Muhammad the Clock Kid. There's always all kinds of costumes that are just offensive and tasteless and cross the line, and we could sit here and we could critique every one of those. But at the end of the day, we wouldn't have any costumes left if all it took was somebody being offended to pull it from the fucking shelves. You gotta get rid of the cowboy costume because the cowboys killed the Indians. You gotta get rid of the Indian costume because the Indians killed the cowboys. You gotta get rid of I dressed as Bill Clinton one year. Well, Bill Clinton, as Noam Chomsky will tell you in detail, he bombed the only pharmaceutical maker in Sudan, and that led to the deaths of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people because they couldn't replenish their medicine, so people died. He did sanctions on Iraq and elsewhere where hundreds of thousands of people died. That guy, it could be argued, whether or not you agree with it is irrelevant, but it could be argued, well, he's genocidal. So I'm offended by that. How dare you wear that mask? It's like wearing a Hitler mask. Take it off. Now, again, whether or not you believe these things is irrelevant. Somebody can theoretically make the argument, so you got to take it off, right? And we can name anything that, could be offensive to somebody. Everything is offensive to somebody for some reason. So I say allow all the costumes. Doesn't mean you're not allowed to talk about it. Doesn't mean you're not allowed to disagree with it. Of course you are. But once you start pressuring companies to not make it or take it off the shelves, I disagree with you. And also, let's keep this in perspective and go a step further. I think this is a manifestation of not being able to solve the real problem and us feeling so ineffectual in solving the real problem that it manifests in weird ways. So I agree, the Palestinians are oppressed, they're occupied, and we need to get a two-state solution. I absolutely agree with that. But when you take your eye off the ball there and you start saying, well, now I don't want any kid to dress like an IDF soldier, well, now that really doesn't have anything to do with trying to get a two-state deal and supporting BDS, for example, and trying to force Netanyahu to the negotiation table. It's not productive. It doesn't help anything. And now, if anything, you're going to make people look at you and go, really? Now I think you're unreasonable in other areas, because in this area you are unreasonable because you're trying to get fucking Halloween costumes pulled off the shelf. Now, again, you can have whatever opinion you want of it, but the problem is when you start telling people, take it off the shelves. Take it off the shelves. Allow everything on the shelves, even things that I think are horrendous and in poor taste, and I'll talk about how it's in poor taste, but I'm not going to try to get them pulled. I'm not going to try to censor. I'm not going to try to micromanage and say that this is a clear example of discrimination and oppression. No, you know what a good example of discrimination and oppression is? Discrimination and oppression that's happening right now in the Palestinian territories and happens daily. Don't take your eye off the ball. Don't become a caricature of what you believe. Focus on the real oppression and leave menial issues about Halloween costumes alone. Even if it's something you disagree with, hate, you find offensive, whatever, allow all the costumes. And finally, let's go to Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson made an endorsement for president on HuffPost Live. Let's watch.
He should be president of the United States. That's what he should be.
So he's got your vote.
Yeah, big time. Why wouldn't anybody like that? The guy that came from where he came from and doing what he's doing, and that's the, now, this is where he's at now. Know what that means? That doesn't mean he's a bad guy, the people don't know what they're doing. That means that people are tired of what you've been doing, what we've been doing the last 20 years. That's all it says. Let's try something new. We tried Obama, right? Time for a change, so we got a change. So now let's try something new.
Right.
Let's run America like a business.
Yeah.
Where no colors matters. And whoever can do the job gets the job.
Mm-hmm. So you're endorsing Trump, essentially.
I would, yeah.
Yeah, I like Trump.
Oh, Iron Mike, what are you doing to me, man? What are you doing to me? Now, understand, when it comes to boxing, nobody's a bigger Mike Tyson fan than I am. The guy was just absolutely amazing. I remember when I was a kid, always being excited when my dad would order the Tyson fights, because it was like, you know, you're watching history and this guy is just something else. So nothing against him, but this idea that, you know, you should endorse Trump, or he's endorsing Trump and saying you should vote for him. Oh, Mike, stop. Because at one point he says there, you know, oh, yeah, he doesn't see color. Like, color doesn't matter. You got to go who's best for the job. Yeah, but that's the thing about Trump. He does see color. He does make decisions based on color. Look at what he said about in his announcement that he was running. Look at what he said about Mexicans. He said, yeah, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people. Okay, that's a guy who sees color, among many other things he said that also prove that. So this isn't the guy that you think he is. And the biggest point was, why not run America like a business? No, but Mike, these are different things. So in business, all that matters is profit. That's the way the system is structured. And that's something else. That's something different. For government, you're supposed to care about the people. You're supposed to prioritize differently. And you're supposed to listen to the American people. Donald Trump looks like the last guy who would ever do that. He's in no way fit for government. And actually, as we know from his record and his four bankruptcies for his companies, he's probably not fit for business either. He didn't make it from nothing, like you were implying there. His daddy was rich, and that led to a lot of the success he had today, because he had a multi-million dollar head start. If you give a lot of people a multi-million dollar head start, they'll do just as good, if not better, than Donald Trump. All right, guys, I love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Mwah. Debate tonight. Look out on Twitter.